VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Friends, thank you for joining us here today on Crosstalk. Last week, the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, warned that humanity stands on the verge of the abyss. He warned of how the world is dangerously close to hitting the 1.5 degrees Celsius target limit of warming. Last Thursday and Friday, April 22nd and 23rd, President Biden invited some 40 world leaders to a summit. Also included 14 cabinet members, 8 CEOs, and Pope Francis to come together for a virtual leaders summit on climate. The White House said the purpose was to underscore the urgency and the economic benefits of stronger climate action. The commitments made by President Biden on behalf of the United States, on behalf of you and me, is going to have a devastating impact upon our nation. Also, on the legislative side, both Senator Bernie Sanders and member of Congress AOC have introduced what's called the Green New Deal for Public Housing Act. Well, discussing these matters with us today, we welcome back to Crosstalk Alex Newman. Alex is an award-winning international freelance journalist, author, researcher, and educator and consultant, foreign correspondent and regular contributor for The New American. He contributes columns to other publications as well. He's authored and co-authored several books. And matter of fact, also is the founder of Liberty Sentinel. Alex, thank you for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's always a pleasure.
Well, Alex, as he was running for president, then-candidate Joe Biden signaled that he was going to be shackling our nation again, that's my word, to the Paris Climate Accords. He was really talking about this document here, this agreement that President Trump had gotten us out of. It really was a treaty, but the former administration, the Obama administration that came under, would not call it a treaty, so it did not have to go through this Senate ratification process. It's still a treaty, though. But, Alex, it didn't take long for President Biden to take action on this and within his first 100 days to bring about this leaders summit. Could you give us some of the backstory to what's going on here?
Yeah, thank you, Jim. And this is such an important story. I was actually in Paris when this monstrosity was negotiated. I was at the UN climate summit there, and Obama was there, and the mass murdering leaders, communist China, were there. Lots of world leaders were there. And I think, to start with, we need to understand what this agreement actually does. The pseudoscience underpinning it is really just a distraction. It's not going to do anything for the climate. It's not going to change the temperature of the planet, regardless of how much economic pain and misery you experience. And to me, it's very clear that these people don't even believe the pseudoscience themselves. And under the Paris Agreement, it becomes very obvious that they don't believe this, because under the Paris Agreement, every government was supposed to come up with a pledge about what they were going to do to reduce CO2 emissions and to help save the planet from global warming. Well, the U.S. government under, really it was the Obama administration, as you pointed out, this was never ratified by the Senate. In fact, Obama claimed it was an executive agreement and didn't need to be ratified by the Senate. But under this agreement, the U.S. government under Obama agreed to massive, massive reductions in CO2. And at this virtual climate summit, Biden just increase that. They went from, decline in CO2 emissions by about a third from 2005 levels to now by more than a half. From, so 50 to 52% decline in CO2 emissions by the year 2030. The Communist Chinese, by contrast, have promised to do nothing but increase their CO2 emissions until at least 2030. And so if these people really believe that CO2 was this toxic poison gas, they would say, wait a minute, we're shutting down American industry, we're shutting down American factories, we're shutting down American power generation, we're destroying American jobs, and all of that productive capacity is going to be shipped over to China, where the CO2 intensity per unit of output, the amount of CO2 that is released into the atmosphere per unit of output, is massively higher than it is in the United States. That makes no sense if you really believe that CO2 is toxic pollution that's going to destroy the climate. So what this does functionally, Jim, is destroys what's left of the U.S. economy, ships our manufacturing jobs, our factories, our productive capacity over to China, and allows China to then start producing all of that, to start gaining the economic benefits of that. And again, the CO2 levels in the atmosphere will not decline at all. Just the CO2 emitted from the United States will decline. So it's a dangerous move. It will severely harm the United States. It will benefit communist China like nothing before in history. And the American people are going to end up paying the price.
So there was no commitment from China to have any kind of reduction whatsoever?
No. During the Paris Agreement, the negotiations, they said, look, we're a developing country. So we don't have to do that. That's all the responsibility of the United States. That's also what India said. That's what Pakistan said. And, you know, to be clear, I don't begrudge them their CO2 emissions at all.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I interviewed Trump's climate advisor, Dr. William Happer, who is a physics professor at Princeton University. And this is on camera. YouTube hasn't taken it down yet. He explained that the Earth is starving for more CO2. One of the really interesting things he said was that it seems like the plants were designed to operate in an atmosphere with 4 to 5 times as much CO2 as we currently have. That's why farmers pump CO2 into their greenhouses. So to be clear, I don't mind the Chinese releasing all the CO2 into the atmosphere that they want to. It's not pollution. You exhale 2 pounds of it every day. If you think you exhale pollution, I probably can't help you. But the idea that communist China does nothing while America destroys its economy,
yeah,
and that this is somehow going to save the climate, it is so ludicrous, Jim, that it's hard to believe anybody could fall for this.
And now, Alex, you just said something here about what we emit as far as CO2 is concerned. That's why population control is part of this, too. We have to decrease the number of humans that are breathing this stuff out.
That's exactly right. And they've been very clear about this, Jim. That's what's so amazing to me is that you have people like Bill Gates, right, the mad scientist pushing these vaccines on everybody. I've got multiple videos of him. He said this on CNN. He said this during a TED Talk. He said, look, we have too much CO2, and the way we can reduce CO2 is by either reducing population or reducing the CO2 intensity per unit of output or reducing various other things, the carbon footprint of each person, things like that. And what he said in this TED Talk that he gave, and people can find this on YouTube, is that if we do a really good job with vaccines and reproductive health care, he's talking about abortion and contraception, then maybe we can reduce the population by 10% to 15%.
My.
And that would be good for stopping global warming. That's what he said. Those words, exact words, that's a direct quote, came out of his mouth.
I thought vaccinations were there to prolong life.
Yeah, well, and see, once people started asking questions about that, like, wait, you want to use vaccines to reduce the population? The Gates Foundation came out and said, oh, no, you guys are all just misunderstanding. We're not talking about killing people with vaccines. We're not talking about sterilizing people with vaccines. We're talking about if less children die from diseases that vaccines will supposedly save them from, then parents will quit being so irresponsible and having, you know, doing what the Lord says and be fruitful and multiply and have lots of children. So very bizarre reasoning. But that was their official excuse after these very bizarre statements started coming to prominence.
Okay, so you told us what happened, you know, with that original Paris Agreement. But as we look then to what happened last Thursday and Friday with this global climate summit, Alex, here's the same thing as China and India, two of the world's biggest greenhouse gas polluters. According to documents that we have seen, they were silent on new emissions targets, even at this global summit last week. So not only years ago are they saying, yeah, we're going to continue our big pollution, basically, but even last Thursday and Friday, nothing for them to change their course of action.
Yeah, and they're saying, oh, maybe at some point in the future we're going to reduce our CO2 emissions, but that's really silly. And in fact, the Indian government, I give them credit for saying we're not going to do anything.
It's
silly. But they're expecting us to do all the CO2 cutting. And one of the things that the Prime Minister of India said, a radical Hindu, when the Paris Agreement was being negotiated is, look, we need a carbon budget for the world. And I think it's a really dishonest semantic trick here that they're playing by calling this carbon. People think of carbon as like, black, dirty, filthy stuff. And the CO2 is actually, again, the gas of life. It's invisible. It's odorless. It's colorless. It doesn't hurt anything. In fact, plants need it to do photosynthesis. But he said, we need a carbon budget for the planet, and the United States, Europe, you guys have pretty much used up all your carbon budget. So whatever's left, we're going to do that, and the other third world countries, the undeveloped countries, get to use that. And so you guys basically get to go back to the Stone Ages or figure out how to exist without emitting CO2, which is, of course, impossible. So very, very dangerous situation, and I think the dictatorships of the world are laughing all the way to the bank, because not only are they getting huge bribes here, they're getting massive amounts of money from Western governments, really from Western taxpayers. They're also, at the same time, convincing Western nations to shut down their own industries, their own production, mm-hmm. and basically just shift that to other countries in the world yes. where dictatorships rule.
You know, I find it also interesting, this is kind of a side note, but this was a virtual summit. It was not an in-person summit, yet President Biden was the only world leader to wear a mask. Did that seem odd to you?
A sign of the times, yeah. and I think it's very embarrassing that that we're having to deal with this. I think it was much more for PR and for optics than anything mm-hmm. else, because Biden passed this executive order saying everybody's got to wear a face mask on federal property. He got a lot of criticism for violating his own order later that day, but it's such a spectacle. It's pathetic, and it's very, very sad, Jim.
So, Alex, the White House indicated that President Biden was going to be making this announcement, which he did, calling for an ambitious 2030 emissions target. If you could comment on what that target is, and then also he spoke about reaching a net zero emission by no later than 2050. So I'd like you to paint a picture for us, not only tell us what his target is for by, you know, 9 years from now, less than 9 years, but also what does the United States of America look like with zero emissions?
Yeah, this is really important for people to understand, Jim, because the semantic games that they're playing are very clever. I'm sure they've done market testing and focus groups to see what would stick. But by describing CO2 as pollution, they have really struck a victory for their cause. But we need to understand that every single human activity releases CO2. There's literally nothing you can do, including sitting on your couch, watching your TV, inhaling and exhaling, even when you die, right, as your body decomposes, CO2 is released into the atmosphere. There's nothing that a human being can do, nothing that doesn't emit CO2. And so to get to net zero, we're talking about essentially shutting down all of our productive capacity and then at the same time figuring out ways to compensate for the CO2 that we release just by existing. And so they have different schemes for that. Basically, you pay money to people to not chop down their forests, things like that. But people need to understand, too, what the economic implications of this are. And it goes so much beyond the economic implications. But this will require a fundamental transformation of the economy. And they want us to believe, and this is the narrative that they're trying to spin, that if we just shut down all of our power plants that use natural gas or coal or oil or whatever different hydrocarbon fuel, we can replace it all with windmills and with solar panels. That, of course, is absolutely ludicrous. There's no way mm-hmm. to power an industrial civilization, even if the technology got drastically better, which after gazillions in subsidies, it hasn't improved much at all, and it won't. It's just simply not possible.
Look what happened in Texas this past winter with the windmills.
It was a perfect example. I mean, it was a beautiful example of what happened. They shut down a lot of their actual power generation. They've replaced it with these silly windmills that only exist because of massive subsidies. And what happened? It got unprecedented cold, record-breaking freezing, which, of course, was not supposed to happen anymore under their silly theories. And they ended up in a shortage, and people died from this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, folks, we're going to pick up with more on this economic impact coming from this the proposal that's coming from President Biden. I tell you, it's going to fundamentally transform this nation, a fulfillment of what President Obama had wanted for this nation. But we'll have more on that after the break. Alex Newman, our guest, you're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, popular creation speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, does the camel store its water in its hump?
No, Chris, the camel does not store water in its hump, but it uses that hump to store fat from which it draws energy when it goes for long stretches without food or water. Actually, there are many specific design characteristics about a camel. It has extra long eyelashes to protect its eyes from wind in the desert. It has the ability to close up its nostrils to protect its lungs, and wide pads on its feet, which make walking on sand easier. Its thick coat of hair protects it from extreme temperatures. It has lots of physiological abilities which are moderated when it has to go without water. The camel has played a very important role in human history. In many ways, it's an obnoxious creature, but it's a marvel of God's design. He created all land animals on day 6 of creation week, back in Genesis.
This is Chris O'Brien. Thanks for going back to Genesis.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Alex Newman, our guest today. We're discussing the Global Climate Summit. This was a virtual leaders summit that happened this past week, last Thursday, Friday. And again, it was some 14 cabinet members, 40 world leaders, 8 CEOs, Pope Francis participating in this virtual leaders summit. And Alex Newman here discussing this with us today. Alex, I know I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but somehow I'm missing out on this great economic benefit that was touted from the White House that this would cause for our nation. You know, we're talking about building all these windmills and other matters here, but we're destroying so much of our nation by doing this. What is this economic benefit I'm missing out on?
Yeah, there is no economic benefit. It's really a very silly argument, and anybody who has even a basic rudimentary understanding of economics would understand this. I really like the way Rand Paul put it. They keep saying we're going to create all these jobs by basically transforming the economy in the way that these people imagine. And Rand Paul pointed out very astutely that we could create millions of jobs by ordering that a lot of pyramids be built. We could order big rocks to be smashed into small rocks. But those are not productive jobs. And to be able to sustain unproductive jobs like building giant pyramids or smashing big rocks into little rocks, we actually need productive jobs that can be taxed, where there's extra wealth, extra value being created that the government can siphon off. So this is not a sensible idea. It doesn't make any sense. Really, this will destroy high-paying jobs in favor of jobs that actually destroy wealth and destroy value. It's a recipe for total disaster.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, he talked about new jobs in, quote, fields we haven't ever conceived of yet. So he's putting the stock in all these new jobs that are going to be created in fields that are, you know, somehow are going to help us redo our nation in its energy, its transportation, every aspect of it. Alex, let me ask you this, because part of the hub of this is what is coming out from groups like the World Meteorological Organization. They put out a tweet April 19th last week saying 2015 to 2020 were the warmest years on record, and every decade since the 1980s has been the warmest decade on record. Are you just being a climate denialist in all of this?
Yeah, it's interesting that they say that. I've actually been following this debate very, very carefully, very closely. I've interviewed dozens of the world's leading scientists on this issue, including, incidentally, a lot of the UN's own scientists. I've interviewed at least half a dozen, probably more, scientists who were either serving on or even leading the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. I've also spoken with the head of the World Meteorological Organization because I go to these UN climate summits. They canceled the one last year. I'm convinced it was because of Trump, not because of COVID. But I've had the opportunity to interview a lot of these people. I've confronted a lot of world leaders on this. I've talked to presidents about this. And what I understand, and I'm not a scientist, I'm not a PhD in anything, but what I gather from talking to these people is we are all being deceived, and a lot of the scientists know this. And I'll give you one very concrete example. So the UN has been telling us that sea levels are going to rise and we're all doomed if we don't pay them a lot of taxes and drastically slash CO2. So I thought, well, that's interesting. And I went and I found the lead UN editor on the sea level section for the UN IPCC report. His name was Dr. Niklas Axel Mörner. He just passed away last year. But people can find the interview. I went to his house in Stockholm, Sweden. We went down to the Baltic Sea and did this interview. And I encourage everybody to go listen to this. I said, look, the UN, the UN IPCC is telling us that we're going to see a cataclysmic sea level rise. Is that true? You were the lead reviewer for the UN IPCC on sea level. You're a world-renowned expert on sea level. What do you say? I said, nope, it's untrue. Sea levels are not only not rising, they are declining. Okay, he's been measuring sea levels for more than he had been. Again, he just passed away. And so I asked him about this, and he told the story. He said, look, I told the UN that this was not true and that I couldn't have my name on this, that this was just simply wrong. It was factually inaccurate. They refused to correct it. And so he said, well, you know what? I have to resign. I can't participate in this. And that's just one example. It's the tip of the iceberg. The idea that the world is hotter now than it ever has been, absolutely debunked by the evidence. If you actually look at the UN's own predictions, and I've done this many times, I've written whole articles on this, the UN has predicted all sorts of things. Generally, what tends to happen is exactly the opposite of what they predicted. So the world is not getting dangerously hotter. There's been some fluctuations. The temperature is not controlled by the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. In fact, the Earth is starving for more CO2. It's all pseudoscience. It's all lies, and it's very, very easy to demonstrate this, Jim, even as a non-scientist.
You know, it's so interesting because we were having some water levels in Lake Michigan, right, that butts up against here the state of Wisconsin here, and talking about the record, you know, water levels that are taking place due to global climate change. And it seemed something caught my attention, Alex, because I remember some years ago we were at record low levels, and I did some research and went back to articles, and, yeah, they were saying we had the record low levels because of global climate change, and, you know, I had to take action. And it doesn't matter what the issue is, what the occurrence is, if we have a snowy winter or a lack of snow, if we have a lot of rain, no rain, hot or cold, somehow we've got to put it all under global climate change to somehow give rationalization or you know, some kind of substance to have a fallback to whatever our premise is going to be in all of this.
Yeah, that's exactly what's been happening, Jim, and we've documented this so extensively. In 2012, 2013, the winter, we had record-shattering cold. We had massive snow like we'd never seen before. And we wrote about this, and then we looked back at the UN's predictions. If you go back to the IPCC reports, they repeatedly, over a period of decades, were saying we're not going to have snow anymore, winters are not going to be cold anymore, it's going to cause all these problems. Well, what did they do when confronted with record-shattering cold and record-shattering levels of snowfall? They said, oh, this is because of global warming. Obama's science czar, John Holdren, literally produced a video where he said there's growing evidence to suggest this record cold and all this record snow is actually caused by global warming. And so the Competitive Enterprise Institute sued John Holdren, said, where is this alleged evidence that you're citing? And, of course, there was no evidence.
Right.
It was a total contradiction of everything the UN and the Obama administration had been predicting, and so they just tried to blame it on global warming in typical fashion.
There's another aspect to all of this as well, and that is the national security implications. Mesh that out for us, if you would.
Yeah, and I think this is really one of the important things for people to understand here. We just had about a month or a month and a half ago two cover stories in the New American Magazine where we address all of these issues, the Paris Agreement, the climate agenda, the shutting down of our oil and our energy infrastructure. Incredibly important for people to understand this. And it's not just going to produce economic devastation. It is going to do that. But what happens when you shut down your industry? What happens when you destroy your economic productivity? Well, the national security implications are just as significant. We have the world's most expensive military. We spend hundreds of billions of dollars every year on the military, and that is made possible by the fact, increasingly by borrowing, but that was made possible by the fact that America had a very vibrant, a very productive economy that was creating huge amounts of surplus wealth that the government could then siphon off and invest in national defense. Well, when you destroy the economy, you also destroy the ability to tax and have a proper military. And the idea that communist China is going to fund our military so we can defend ourselves against communist China is self-evidently ridiculous. So their economy will keep building up. That'll enable them to continue funding their massive military expansion and maybe even get ahead of us technologically, which is the last edge we still have. Very, very concerning prospect. And I would think that the Pentagon would be sounding the alarm. Instead, all of the leading people there have been replaced by global warming alarmists who are now claiming that climate change is a national security threat. So our nation is in incredibly dire straits right now, Jim, and there's no way to sugarcoat it. On the economic front, on the national security front, these things are going to have a devastating impact.
Now, it seemed one of the closing messages of last Friday was go forth and spend. I mean, President Biden touted his seeking this $2.3 trillion, and that's going to take us into the legislation aspect here, seeking $2.3 trillion from this Congress for legislation to implement his vision for all of this. But, Alex, to me, it just appeared like he's trying to hasten our economic collapse as a nation.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people struggle to accept that, but to me it's the only logical conclusion that can be reached here. We are dealing with forces that actually do want to bankrupt and collapse the U.S. economy. There's no other conceivable purpose. Now, I know at the grassroots level, yes, they've convinced many well-meaning, naive people who reject the Bible and who reject truth and scientific evidence, or who haven't even been trained to observe the science, look at the science, they've convinced a lot of naive people to go along with this agenda. But at the higher levels, it's so clear that these people know what they're doing. And we need to understand that, because I don't think you can properly address the problem until you accurately diagnose the problem. And an accurate diagnosis of this issue requires us to recognize that these people are doing this on purpose. They're not idiots. In fact, that's a silly hypothesis. If they were idiots, they wouldn't be sitting where they are.
I understand the Friday summit also had billionaires, Bill Gates and Mike Bloomberg, participating.
Yes, and the irony of this is just off the charts. You see, Michael Bloomberg, he's got multiple private jets. He's got multiple yachts. He's got huge mansions all over the world. In fact, I've run into him regularly. I ran into him in Madrid and asked him some questions. You know, he wants to disarm us, and yet he was completely surrounded by heavily armed guards. He wants to force us to ride our bicycles and to stop eating meat and all the rest of it to save the climate, and yet he jets around the world in his CO2-spewing private jet, and then he gets home and he gets in his private helicopter and gets to his private gas-guzzling limousine. Again, this is more evidence that these people do not believe what they say. They really believe, and, you know, Jim, I can tell you from going to these climate summits over the last decade, you see hundreds, if not thousands, of CO2-spewing private jets at the airport whenever one of these climate summits happens. The celebrities, the Hollyweird people, the government leaders, they all show up in these CO2-spewing jets, and then they lecture us about how we need to ride our bicycles and we need to stop eating meat. It's not just hypocrisy. It's evidence that these people don't believe this stuff themselves. And John Kerry, the climate czar, he actually flew to Iceland in a private jet a couple years ago to pick up his climate leadership award. And then when asked about it, he said, oh, well, you know, that's the only option for people like me.
Right.
So
right.
They don't believe it, Jim.
Yep. Now I'm above the rest. I mean, we have seen that hypocrisy on so many different fronts. And that really takes us also to this legislation that is in tandem with the summit, and we've got the likes of Bernie Sanders, AOC, unveiling what's called the Green New Deal for Public Housing Act. This is the fulfillment of this $2.3 trillion wish list by President Biden and the extremist agenda that's part of it. What do we know about this plan?
Well, it's a multifaceted plan. The Green New Deal is basically a comprehensive program to totally restructure our society. Senator Markey from Massachusetts just announced the other day the introduction of this Green New Deal again. And in his press conference where he announced it, he actually said something very profound and very true. This is not just a new deal. It's not just a resolution. This is, he said, a revolution. And that's what it is. This is a revolution in line with Marxist principles. It's an effort to completely overturn the biblical foundations of our society, the foundations in liberty, our founding documents, our history, traditional America, and replace it with the same system of government that we've seen so many other places. Now, the justification is the environment. However, I've interviewed many people on this. This will actually have the function of destroying the environment. And let me give you one example, Jim. A couple years ago, I was up in Canada speaking at a conference, and one of the other speakers there was one of the co-founders of Greenpeace. He actually served as president of Greenpeace Canada. Very respected man, a scientist, Dr. Patrick Moore.
Tell you what,
let's
pick up with that right after the break. Alex Newman with us here today on Crosstalk and talking about this global climate summit. So what happened with this encounter with this individual from Greenpeace? You're going to be hearing about that after the break. This is Crosstalk on BCY America. Back in 1 minute.
More now than at any other time in our nation's history, we are deluged in all forms of media. Television, radio, video games, social media, smartphones, iPads, iPods, computers, Blu-ray, and a myriad of other offerings. Along with all of this exposure comes the key question: how do I safeguard myself and family from that which is inappropriate? In the book, Biblical Filters for Your Media Choices, author Joe Schlero presents 10 biblical filters a Christian must consider before engaging in the media. This 50-page booklet presents a biblical filter derived from scriptural principles. VCY America is offering one copy of the booklet for a donation of $7, or get 5 copies for a donation of $30. Call 1-800-729-9829 and ask for Biblical Filters for Your Media Choices.
This is Crosstalk on BCY America. Alex Newman, our guest here today. And folks, you'll read his columns at thenewamerican.com, thenewamerican.com, libertysentinel.org as well, libertysentinel.org. I understand, Alex, by people can go to these sites and even sign up to get email alerts and synopsis and so forth.
Yes. Thank you, Jim, for the opportunity. So if you go to thenewamerican.com, you can sign up for our daily headlines. If you prefer weekly, you can do that too, or even monthly. If weekly is too much for you, you'll get the most important news of the day. If you get the daily one, again, it's totally free. Just put your email in, and we'll send you one email per day with the five or six top headlines of the day. None of the fake news, none of the propaganda, just the truth. If you go to my website, libertysentinel.org, that's my personal site. I do have a newsletter. I put it out less than once a month. So for people who are interested in staying updated on that, just libertysentinel.org. You can put your name and your email in, and we don't sell them to anybody. And for people who want the print magazine at The New American, they can subscribe right there. You'll get two issues per month delivered to your door.
Okay, thenewamerican.com, and again, libertysentinel.org. So, Alex, tell us about that encounter with a representative from Greenpeace.
Yeah, so Dr. Patrick Moore, this was right when the Green New Deal had first been unveiled by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and some of these others. And he had read through it, and so this was a very new topic. And I asked him, so what do you think about this Green New Deal? And he's a big-time environmentalist. I mean, he has been all his life. And what he had to say really struck me. He said it's a recipe for mass suicide. He said this would result in a catastrophic die-off of human beings. And the other thing he said really kind of caught me off guard, because I guess you really have to think like a radical environmentalist to think this. But he said what bothers me even more than that is that before everybody died off, all the trees would be chopped down. Mm-hmm. Because if we get rid of hydrocarbon fuels, people are still going to need to cook. People are still going to need to heat their homes. And so what are they going to do? They're going to go out, and he said they're going to chop down every tree on this planet. And obviously that would not be good for the environment that these Green New Deal advocates claim they are going to defend.
Where is this all headed, Alex?
Well, I think it's all part of the much broader agenda, and that is to move us toward a one-world government system. And what they're doing with the climate is basically using that as a pretext to bring in global taxation, global authorities under the leadership of the United Nations. Now we're moving toward a global currency by the IMF, and the climate issue is a big part of that. It's even playing a big role in the emergence of this uniting of global religions. A couple years ago in Germany, people from leaders of all of these different world religions, Catholicism, Orthodox, Protestant, Hinduism, Shintoism, Buddhism, African paganism, South American paganism, voodoo, all of them came together at this global conference. And they actually said in the final agreement that they came out with that protecting the environment, saving the planet, stopping global warming, implementing Agenda 2030 are principles that all the religions of the world need to unite around. And people can go read this declaration. So this is moving us forward on every front toward precisely what the Bible tells us is coming as we get closer to the end. And I can assure you, you're not going to die. The planet's not going to be destroyed as a result of global warming or CO2 emissions. Yes, the planet will cook, but not because of your SUV.
Alex Newman with us here today on Crosstalk. We're going to open our phone lines, give you opportunity to interact with him. Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. 800-733-9829 is the number to Crosstalk. And, friends, we continue to remind you that God has promised in his word that, as long as the earth remains here, the whole aspect of summer and winter and the heat and snow and all that's going to happen, it's not going to cease. God has put this program into rotation here, Alex, if you will. He's put it into this whole aspect of sustaining creation itself. And he's the one who's in control of it. And someday there is going to be a global warming like this world has never seen before, coming down through judgment. But the aspect is God has promised in his word that day and night is not going to cease. We don't have to go fret. We don't have to worry about are we going to put too much carbon into our planet here?
That's exactly right. And I mean, people really need to understand this from a biblical context. And once you dig deep into what's going on at these climate summits, you see that it really is an anti-Christian agenda at the core. And I'll give you one more example before we go to the phones, Jim. At the UN Climate Summit in 2012, this took place in Rio de Janeiro. The lady who was running the conference, the executive secretary of the UNFCCC, the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, her name was Cristiana Figueres. She opened the summit with a prayer, but not a prayer to God, the creator of the heavens and the earth. She opened it with a prayer to Ixchel, who she described as the Mayan goddess of creativity and tapestries. And so she prayed that this Mayan goddess, jaguar goddess or whatever, would give the delegates the wisdom and the insight to weave a creative, beautiful tapestry that would save us from global warming. So naturally, I whipped out my laptop. And, who is this Ixchel? And it took me all of 2 seconds to find out that Ixchel was actually the goddess of cannibalism and war and human sacrifice.
Oh, my.
So there is a very satanic agenda at work here, Jim.
Wow. Again, our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. The lines are packed right now. As soon as you hear somebody hang up, that's your opportunity to call in with your question or brief comment. Let's begin with Nikki calling in from Aquanico, Wisconsin. Nikki, you're on the air.
Hello, Alex Newman. I love your interviews, just all the stuff you put out. I wondered if you could speak to people about the solution to the Fed's overspending or overstepping their constitutional bounds. For example, we have a lot of people that that say the solution to not going into world government is to call an Article 5 convention or a convention of states. What would you say to them?
Thank you, Nikki.
Yeah, thank you, Nikki, for that question. Unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to have the time to give it an adequate answer, but I'll throw out my initial thoughts. I think an Article 5 convention is actually potentially one of the most catastrophic things that we could do. And I say potentially. It's not guaranteed. You know, I think a best-case scenario, nothing would happen, nothing bad would happen. But we are opening up ourselves to an incredible risk because under Article 5, the states are empowered to force Congress to call a convention for proposing and considering amendments to the U.S. Constitution. They also would have the inherent power to throw the Constitution in the garbage. They actually did that in 1787. They were sent to make amendments to the Articles of Confederation. They threw the Articles of Confederation in the trash and gave us a whole new constitution. You know, praise God, it ended up being a pretty good constitution. I mean, in retrospect, the Anti-Federalists had some good points. You know, it was a pretty decent constitution, and it served us well for the last 200-plus years. Unfortunately, I'm very concerned, and you know, don't get me wrong, I know there's a ton of well-meaning people supporting this idea, and I don't mean this as an attack on anybody. I know even people who I love and care about and trust a lot have gotten on board with this. I think the big danger is they would hijack this convention, propose amendments that would have the function of basically legitimizing all of these abuses. Because right now, the Constitution is not the problem. The Constitution actually prohibits almost all of this. It prohibits all of Joe Biden's climate agenda. It prohibits these outrageous rulings by the Supreme Court. It prohibits this rule by administrative agency. None of that is constitutional. And as long as the Constitution is still the supreme law of the land, we have that that we can go back to. We have that that we can fall back on, where if the American people wake up and say, wait a minute, this is wrong, we just go back to enforcing the Constitution as written. So I think it's very dangerous. But as for solutions, I really don't think solutions will be found in the political realm, at least not exclusively. I think the real solution is going to be, I mean, it's almost cliche at this point, but 2 Chronicles 7:14,
yeah,
we need to get on our knees and pray and seek God's face,
yeah,
and repent of our wicked ways, and God then says he'll heal our land. But in the political realm, there is a lot that state governments can do. I think nullification is a very valuable tool. It's based on thoroughly Christian doctrines, like the doctrine of the lesser magistrates, where lesser magistrates, governors, state legislators, sheriffs, county commissions, have not just the right, but the obligation to interpose on behalf of their people, of their citizens, when the higher magistrates, in this case Joe Biden, Supreme Court of the United States, et cetera, are abusing their authority. It's very clear that they're abusing their authority. Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the Declaration of Independence, and James Madison, the father of the U.S. Constitution, both said nullification was the rightful remedy. Jim is in Wisconsin right now.
Yes.
Wisconsin was one of the states that used this very effectively against the Fugitive Slave Act, right? Congress passed a law saying that slaves who escaped from their masters and went north but have to be returned. The state of Wisconsin said, nope, we're not going to participate in that. That's an abomination. Slavery is wrong. And we can do that again. And states are doing that again. In fact, Democrats have become masters of it, right? Go to Colorado, go to Washington, go to California. They're all smoking pot, and they're doing it in flagrant defiance of a federal statute. So conservatives can do that, too. We can protect our babies. We can protect our gun rights. We can protect our religious liberties. And we can refuse to go along with and cooperate with this United Nations globalist agenda.
Nikki, thank you for raising the issue. It's a very elongated issue here and certainly deserving a program in itself. Let's go to Robin in Kentucky. Robin, you're on the air.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering, in I think it was 1840, 1860, we just got thermometers. And the weird thing about it, they weren't very much of them back then anyway, and we couldn't really measure very many things. Another thing, I don't know if you ever seen any pictures back in the 1800s, but people used to heat everything with trees, and there was hardly any trees around, especially during the Civil War. But anyway, also, the European countries tried a lot of this new carbon reduction, and Germany right now has tried all new, what's it called, new energy stuff, and they're right now, all their electricity comes, most of it comes from across their lines, across their borders, and they're having trouble producing anything in their country. And remember what, what's his name, Trump said, he was talking about, you know, they need energy. Anyway, I'll let you answer some questions. Thank you.
Any comments here, Alex? Hello, Alex?
Hey, I'm sorry, Jim. I missed that last little bit of the question.
Okay. Well, it was more, he didn't have a specific question. He had several things, comments he made. For instance, weren't thermometers just come about in the late 1800s and so forth? Had a number of issues there.
Yeah, well, that's a really important thing to understand, and I've done extensive research on this issue of global temperatures. I encourage people to read some of what we've written about this. We've written very extensively on it.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually looked at the global temperature data sets. If anything, I believe, and many, many of the prestigious scientists I've interviewed believe that we're headed into a period of global cooling, but the caller made an excellent point. And it's actually even worse than that. Until recently, our thermometers were not even very precise. It was, you know, give or take a degree or two. And the idea that the temperature is steadily rising as CO2 increases, that's only made possible through the fudging of the data. They've been caught doing it repeatedly. In fact, we have emails from the ClimateGate scandal where some of the leading, quote-unquote, climate researchers responsible for this temperature data were caught saying that we've got to hide the decline in temperatures. So, and I'll say one more thing about this temperature issue, because I think this really settles the whole discussion. They told us that as CO2 concentrations increased in the atmosphere, the temperature of the planet was going to steadily increase. Well, CO2 concentrations have been steadily increasing in the atmosphere for the last 30 years, and during the last few decades, we have seen virtually no warming whatsoever. And so the UN has all these climate models, and that's what all this is based on. It's based on climate models and computer models that they've created, not that reflect reality, but mm-hmm. that reflect what they want them to reflect. Every single one, they had 72 models, every single one massively overestimated the warming. And that's all you need to know.
Alex Newman, our guest. We'll come back to more of your phone calls following this break. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. We're talking about the Global Climate Summit. Alex's websites, libertysentinel.org, thenewamerican.com. Back in a minute.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brennan House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Recently, Mike Lindell declared on one of his broadcasts, "What we're seeing in America now is communism." Many people may think that's over the top, but it's not. Recently, I acquired, in writing, a report written by progressives out of the United States House of Representatives, by 13 of them. And you know what they want? They want us to stop using the phrase, "In God We Trust." They also told the Biden administration they should not be using the phrase, "Judeo-Christian." They also went on to say they want the Biden administration and his agencies to decide who is a church and who is not, who can be a 501c3 church and who cannot. They also wanted to eliminate all non-religious exemptions for vaccines And they also want the Department of Homeland Security and Justice to use funds for de-radicalization of conservatives.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Alex Newman with us here today. And friends, really, check out their website. Here's a website here for libertysentinel.org, thenewamerican.com. You'll find insight and information that you're not going to get from the major media here across this nation. Alex, just before we pick up our next phone call here, you've alerted me to a very interesting matter going on as it relates to Russia and China and what they're pouring their money into as it impacts the United States.
Yeah, one of the things that we discovered in Madrid in 2019, that was the last UN climate summit that took place, and we got these materials and letters and documents from Congress. So this was not our research that we relied on. Unfortunately, the media didn't talk about it. Was there has been a pipeline of Russian money coming from Kremlin-connected entities such as Gazprom, the state Russian oil company, which, by the way, something like 50% of Russia's exports come from oil. So it's, you know, very, very significant for the Russians. They've been pumping money into a shell corporation in Bermuda called Klein Limited. Klein Limited then turned around and sent that money to the United States to an organization called the Sea Change Foundation. From the Sea Change Foundation, it was widely distributed to all sorts of green groups in the United States, including the Climate Action Network, one of the world's largest global warming alarmist organizations. And then the Chinese played a role in all of this as well. We have documents now that have come out of the State Department where a global warming institute owned and controlled and operated by the Communist Party of China, based in China, was reaching out to green groups in America and working with them to influence the Obama administration during the negotiations for the Paris Agreement. So we have Russians and Communist Chinese influencing and even in some cases financing the so-called environmental movement in the United States. They're demanding that we keep our oil in the ground, that we shut down our economy. Meanwhile, Russia and China, they can do whatever they want and then invest all the profits in their military. It's almost like they want to destroy the country on purpose.
My. Michelle Watertown, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a question and a comment. My comment is, how can they say they know that we're going to be dealing with global warming, climate change, when they haven't had the information to actually measure it? As the guy said, few callers before, they only invented thermometers in the 1800s, so they haven't even got enough information, and we haven't even had the thought to worry about climate can change until then. So how can they even have an accurate announcement statement about that? Secondly, how can we as intelligent human beings take them seriously, being back in high school you were taught that plants lived off what you exhaled? And I'll take your answers offline.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Alex.
Thank you so much for the call, Michelle. These are all really important points. I think the broader point to understand is that it's not climate that these people care about. Yes, the rent-a-mobs out in the street, the ragamuffins at the grassroots level that are asking for this type of thing, they've been convinced that that's the issue. But communists have an old saying. In fact, the Students for a Democratic Society used to use this a lot back in the 60s. The issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution. And that applies to all these things. It's not really about climate. It's not really about systemic racism. It's not really about housing. It's not really about allegedly racist police. The issue is always the revolution. And so that's the common thread that runs through all of these issues. The people at the top are not worried about global warming. They're not worried about climate change. They're worried about how to separate you from your liberties, how to separate you from your money, and how to move this global agenda forward. And it just so happens that telling people that the gas they exhale, the gas that is emitted every time they do anything is a pollution, is a perfect pretext for this. The pseudoscience underpinning it, that was all created specifically for the purpose of justifying the agenda. And that becomes very, very clear when you study this for even a brief moment, especially if you really dig into it.
We've got Laura next in Watertown, South Dakota.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Thank you so much for taking my call, Jim. Hey, thank you, Alex. Love, love, love your work. I'm a subscriber to New American. Got your book with the CFR members in it. I just want to point out I'm holding in my hand a liberal magazine from 2019 with an article stating that Rihanna Gunn-Wright was the Rhodes Scholar and former intern to Michelle Obama, and she is the actual architect of the Green New Deal. I also have a copy of the Green New Deal and the Agenda 2030, but I kind of would like your comment on that. I guess she's 29 years old. She's got...
Okay, let me have Alex go ahead. You're familiar with this, Alex?
Well, thank you so much for calling in. I'm not familiar with that individual particularly, but you know, we have a lot of these people that have been through the Rhodes Scholar Program, and there are many of them going to the Clintons, going to Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. They pick bright young people who they know are going places with or without them, and they offer them large amounts of money and scholarships and training. And what happens is they basically give them a way of thinking, and they use them for purposes just like this. And the Green New Deal, I encourage people to go read this for themselves, the resolution that they introduced. It's basically a total repudiation of biblical principles in very, very specific ways, too. For example, one of the things that was in the Q&A that was released by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's office was that we need to pay people who don't want to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a total contradiction of what Paul says, that
yes.
If you don't work, you don't eat, unless you know, you're a widow or an orphan or you need assistance mm-hmm. in some way. So it's a very unbiblical agenda. We have very nefarious characters acting behind the scenes. The Rhodes Scholarship is very important. In fact, Cecil Rhodes actually left the infrastructure in place in his will to advance a lot of these agendas. So he created the roundtable groups. This is all discussed in the book Tragedy and Hope. And the chief manifestation of that here in the United States is the Council on Foreign Relations, which the caller mentioned. It's a big web to unwind. We won't have time to do it, but I appreciate the call, and I hope people will take this seriously. You've got to look behind the curtain to see who's really driving this. It's not the people that we're being told.
Let's see if we can squeeze in Jeff from Pace, Florida. You're on the air, Jeff.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask you if you could talk on the Pope's stance, any current statements he's made about climate change and where he falls on the topic.
Thank you, Jeff. And I should say this, Lord willing, that's one of the topics that we have scheduled for tomorrow, but a brief comment on that, Alex, if you would.
Yeah, thank you to the caller. I really appreciate it. And it's very clear that the Pope is entirely on board with this agenda on all fronts. He's now created the Vatican Council on Inclusive Capitalism, an effort to reform the whole system. They've brought the Rothschilds on board. So big things happening. The Vatican's right at the center of it. And thank you so much for the call.
And again, Lord willing, more tomorrow on that very issue. Alex Newman with us here today. Alex, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Jim.
Folks, again, libertysentinel.org, thenewamerican.com. If you need a phone number to The New American, it's 800-727-TRUE, 800-727-TRUE. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.